Welcome to the Jukebox, Centennial College's All Request Radio Show. I am your host, Zach Murillo, and with me again is co-host and guest, Chris Murillo.
What's happening, guys?
So today, as you guys have heard, we are doing another special band request episode. This week, we are doing Aerosmith, some band from the 70s, 80s, and 90s that everyone loves. Their songs have been chart toppers for many years. Everyone recognizes them, except some who, like 13, 14-year-olds who don't listen to good rock and roll music. So, to start off, I think we're just going to talk about how this show, how we came up with the idea for this, for today's show. It started off pretty much me and Chris, we were at home. We were just chilling on the long weekend. And we were playing the Wii, because besides the PS3, what else is there really to do on a long weekend? Some of you may have ideas, but we'll save those for later. You can tell me on Facebook later. So we're staying home. We're playing the Wii. We decide to play Guitar Hero. And we have Guitar Hero World Tour, but we decide to go over and play the Aerosmith version. And that got me thinking, there are so many good Aerosmith songs out there to play. Why don't I do a whole episode dedicated to Aerosmith, like I did a couple of months back with the U2 episode. So that's how this episode kind of came into being. We got a bunch of Aerosmith songs together, and we found a bit of history on them. So that'll be coming later. First off, we're going to be playing for you one of their more popular hits, Sweet Emotion. Afterwards, we'll be giving a little bit of the history for you guys, so tune in and enjoy. You are listening to The Jukebox.
Yeah.
Hey guys, and that was Aerosmith with Dude Looks Like a Lady, and before that we had Sweet Emotion. Sorry, what were you saying?
Those are some very good songs.
Those are really good songs. I love these songs. Love Aerosmith. They're an awesome band. So, as I said before, guys, or if you're just tuning in now, this is our special Aerosmith episode. Our whole episode tonight is dedicated to Aerosmith and their past. So I'm going to start you off with a little bit of information on how the band actually formed. So in 1964, Steven Tyler formed his own band called The Strangers. It's spelled weird. And later called Chain Reaction in New Hampshire. Meanwhile, Perry and Hamilton Jam Band, commonly known as Joe Perry's Jam Band, which was based on freeform and blues. Hamilton and Perry moved to Boston in September. There they met Joey Kramer of Yonkers, New York. Kramer had known Steven Tyler before and previously. After they all graduated from Berklee College of Music, he decided to quit and join the jam band. In 1970, Action and Jam Band played at the same gig. Tyler immediately loved jam band sound and wanted to combine the two bands together. In October 1970, the bands met up again and considered the proposition. Steven Tyler, who was a backup singer in Chain Reaction, adamantly refused to play drums in his new band, insisting that he would only take part if he could be the frontman and lead vocalist. The others agreed, and a new band was born, although it was still missing a name. The members of the band reportedly spent afternoons getting stoned and watching the Three Stooges reruns. One day, they had a post-Stooges meeting and tried to come up with a name. Kramer said that when he was in school, he would write the word Aerosmith all over his notebooks. The name had popped into his head after listening to Harry Nilsson's album Aerial Ballet, which featured jacket art of a circus performer jumping out of a biplane. Initially, Kramer's bandmates were nonplussed. They all thought he was referring to the Sinclair Lewis novel they were forced to read in high school English class. No, not Aerosmith, Kramer explained. Aerosmith, literally said like that. The band settled upon the name after also considering the name The Bananas and Spike Jones. Soon the band added Ray Tabano, a childhood friend of Tyler, as rhythm guitarist and began playing local shows. Aerosmith played their first gig in Mendon, Massachusetts at Nipmuc Regional High School in 1970. In 1971, Tabano was replaced by Brad Whitford, who also attended the Berklee School of Music and was formerly in the band Earth, Inc. Brad Whitford, being from Reading, Massachusetts, had played at Reading's A.W. Coolidge Middle School. Other than a period from July 1979 to April 1984, the lineup of Tyler, Perry, Hamilton, Kramer, and Whitford had stayed the same for many years. So, next up, we're going to be playing another song for you by Aerosmith, Ragdoll. I know this is a song many of you will enjoy, many of you love to listen to, and, like I said, enjoy! Sorry guys, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties here,
An oops.
Yeah, something happened with the audio. Give me a sec to figure this out. We are getting audio, but something is wrong. Okay. I don't know what is wrong with this. It is giving me trouble. So, as we figure out what is wrong with our music, I'll give you a little bit more history, more... Chris,
I can do it, sure, why not?
Okay, read off a little bit for me.
Alright then, so how they got their first record deals. So after reforming the band and finalizing the lineup in 1971, the band started to garner some local success doing live shows. Originally booked through the Ed Malhoy Agency, the band signed a promotion deal with Frank Connolly, and eventually, what is this?
Sorry, keep going, Chris.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, you get that. I'll get that.
So eventually, they originally wrote No Surprise off their Night in the Ruts album, celebrating the moments of their fame began. Aerosmith signed with Columbia in mid-1972 for a reported $125,000 and issued their debut album, Aerosmith, released in January 1973. The album peaked at number 166. The album was straightforward rock and roll with well-defined blues influences, laying the groundwork for Aerosmith's signature blues rock sound. Although the highest charting single from that album was Dream On at number 59, several tracks such as Mama Kin and Walkin' the Dog would become staples of the band's live shows and receive airplay on rock radio. The album reached gold status initially and eventually went on to sell 2 million copies and was certified double platinum after the band reached mainstream success over a decade later. After constant touring, the band released their second album, Get Your Wings, in 1974, the first of a string of multi-platinum albums produced by Jack Douglas. This album included the rock radio hits Same Old Song and Dance, and then Train Kept Rollin', which we will be playing later. A cover done previously by the Yardbirds, the album also contains several fan favorites, including Lord of the Thighs, Season of Wither, and SOS Too Bad, darkest songs which would have become staples in the band's live shows. To date, Get Your Wings has sold 3 million copies. Yeah, that's a lot. 1975 Toys in the Attic, however, that established Aerosmith as an international star, competing with the likes of Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones. Originally derided as the Rolling Stones knockoffs in part due to the physical resemblance between lead singers Steven Tyler and Mick Jagger. No, not Mick Jagger. Mick Jagger. Yeah, I know. Toys in the Attic showed that Aerosmith was a unique and talented band in their own right. Toys in the Attic was an immediate success, starting with the single Sweet Emotion, which we also will be playing later, which became the band's first top 40 hit. This was followed by a successful re-release of Dream On, which hit number 6, also playing later. Yeah, I know. Becoming their best charting single of 1970s. Walk This Way, re-released in 1976, reached the top 10 in early 1977. Go over there.
So, guys, we're going to try playing the music for you again. We're having some technical difficulties. I don't know what's up with this, but let's try this. Do we have any music coming through? Give me a sec. No, it doesn't seem like it. We have no music. Okay. Well, Chris, go on with some more of the history while I try to figure this out.
There are being some oopses right now, so stay with us. So, like I was saying, the Toys in the Attic and the Big 10-inch record, the song which was originally Bull Moose Jackson, became concert staples. As a result of this success, both of the band's preview albums recharted. Toys in the Attic has gone on to become the band's best-selling studio album in the States, with certified U.S. sales of 8 million copies. So, Draw the Line in Live, Bootleg, 1976 and 1978. Yeah. Next album was 1976 Rocks, which captured Aerosmith as the most raw and Are we getting the music back on?
We've got music.
All right, then.
We have music. Sorry, guys. Chris, you know what? You finish, and then we'll continue with the music.
Okay. So, Last Child, Back in the Sub, along with Ballad Home Tonight, which was also charted, was part of the Platinum record. Rocks has sold 4 million copies to date. 4 million copies, everybody. Both Toys in the Attic and Rocks are highly regarded, especially in the hard rock genre, and appear on such lists as Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums of All Time, and are cited by members of Guns N' Roses, Metallica, Motley Crue, and having large influences on their music. Soon after Rocks was released, the band continued to tour heavily, this time headlining their own shows and playing to several large stadiums and rock festivals. The next album that they released in 1977, Draw the Line, was not as successful or as critically acclaimed as their two previous episodes, although the title track proved to be a hit, and it's still a live staple, and Kings and Queens also charted. Now, when Perry and Whitford both departed afterwards, while Nights in the Rut and Rock in a Hard Place. In the middle of the recording of their sixth studio album, which was Nights in the Rut in 1979...
No, we'll just continue with some music. We'll continue with the history in a bit, guys. I don't want to give you guys too much info and not as much music. So, here you guys go. This is Ragdoll by Aerosmith. Yes, enjoy. Hey guys, that was Dream On by Aerosmith, and before that, we had Ragdoll. So sorry earlier about the technical difficulties we had, uncontrollable. Anyways, back to our history, as where Chris left off. In the middle of the recording of their sixth studio album in 1979, their album Night in the Ruts, Joe Perry left the band and formed the Joe Perry Project. Perry was replaced first by longtime band friend and songwriter Richard Supa, and then by guitarist Jimmy Crespo, formerly in the band Flame. Night in the Ruts quickly fell off the charts, although it would eventually go platinum several years later, its only single being a cover of The Shangri-La's Remember, Walking in the Sand, which topped out at number 67. The band continued to tour in support of Night in the Ruts when new guitarist Jimmy Crespo on board, but by 1981 the band's popularity had waned. Steven Tyler collapsed on stage during a performance in Portland, Maine in early 1980. Also in 1980, Aerosmith released its Greatest Hits album. The album has gone on to become the band's best-selling album in the United States, with sales at up to 11 million copies. In the fall of 1980, Tyler was injured in a serious motorcycle accident, which left him hospitalized for 2 months and unable to tour on record well into 1981. In 1981, the band suffered another loss with the departure of Brad Whitford, who recorded Whitford/St. Holmes, with former Ted Nugent vocalist and guitarist Derek St. Holmes. After recording guitar parts for the song Lightning Strikes, Whitford was replaced by Rick Dufay, and the band recorded their seventh album, Rock in a Hard Place, in 1982. The album was commercially weak, only going gold, and produced only a moderate hit single, Lightning Strikes. During the tour of Rock in a Hard Place, Tyler again collapsed on stage, this time at the band's homecoming show in Worcester, Massachusetts, after getting high with Joe Perry, who met with Aerosmith backstage that evening. In 1984, Aerosmith embarked on a reunion tour, the Back in the Saddle Tour, which led to the live album Classics Live 2. While concerts on the tour were well attended, it was plagued with several incidents, mostly attributed to drug abuse by band members, mostly Tyler Perry. Their problems still not behind them, the group was signed to Geffen Records and began working on a comeback. Despite the band signing onto a new record company, Columbia continued to reap the benefits of Aerosmith's comeback, releasing the live companion albums Classic Live 1 and 2 and the collection Gems. So, to get you guys back on track with the music, we're going to play, Back in the Saddle, there we go. We're going to put Back in the Saddle for you guys to get you in with their reunion. This is the first song they played on stage at their first, on their Welcome Back tour, just to show that they were back. Hope you guys enjoy. Hey guys, you are listening to the Jukebox Centennial College's All Request Radio Show. I'm your host, Zach Murillo, and with me in studio is guest Chris Murillo.
What's up, guys? How's it going?
So hopefully you guys are enjoying this week's episode of the Jukebox. We're doing a special Aerosmith episode for you guys. We've had a little bit of technical difficulties, but we're still coming strong for you. We're still playing a bunch of Aerosmith's best hits. So to complete our little bit of history that we've been doing on the band, after their big reunion tour, there wasn't really, back in the early 80s, there wasn't really much that the band has done since then. They had a couple of tours like Done with Mirrors, Tyler Perry battled with his drug rehab, the Pump album, Get a Grip, Big Ones, Nine Lives, and I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. They've had many good hits, many tours, but none as big as their final reunion. Ever since their reunion tour, they have been going downhill. Eventually, in mid-2000s, the band finally broke up for good and have split up to do their own musical projects. Most notably and most recent would be Tyler's role, I guess you would say, as a judge on this newest season of American Idol. Personally, I think that when you go from being the lead singer of an amazing rock band to judge of American Idol, I'm pretty sure your career is done. Unfortunately, Aerosmith, in my opinion, is and always will be a great band, but due to complications, due to arguments, due to many different issues, most of which not being made public, but everyone has made assumptions, the band has split up and probably will not have another good album or comeback.
It's a darn shame.
Yeah. So, Chris, out of these songs that we played, or out of all of Aerosmith's songs, which one do you think would be your favorite?
Back in the Saddle and Ragdoll. Tie between those two all the way, man.
Back in the Saddle and Ragdoll. Personally, this next one is my favorite. All of you, hopefully, will recognize this one and will sing along with it. So, hope you guys enjoy. This is Walk This Way. We'll be right back. Hey guys, hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode of The Jukebox. Tune in next week for another awesome episode. Not sure what we're going to be doing yet, so send in your requests. Everyone doing requests, please. So send some in. Send in your requests, your dedications, whatever you want if you're here next week on the show. And we'll play them for you.
But even without requests, we are dedicated. We will play music anyway.
Yes, me and Chris will figure out next week's playlist if you don't help us. So, to end this week's show, we've got one last song for you. Living on the Edge by
Bam.
Hope you guys enjoy. This has been The Jukebox with your host, Zach Murillo.
And Chris. Request.
So, yeah.
Do it now.
But to end you guys off, here is Living on the Edge by Aerosmith. Enjoy.
Hello.